second 272nd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County 5th District Supervisor Ryan Summers. Hey, guy.
Mr. Papstein, my friend, how are you, sir?
Good. Did you get a chance to go on the PG&E Whirly Bird last week?
No, I never get invited to the fun things.
Oh, it kind of looked like they were having a gathering of all the PG&E trucks in the region.
Yeah, it came down a week ago, but
there's a bunch of
at the schoolhouse.
There's a bunch in McKinleyville right now on School Road.
Okay.
They are undergrounding all the utilities on School Road.
Oh, you guys get the fancy service.
Yeah, it's going to be really nice.
$1 million mile? Is that still about what it costs?
It's probably around there, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's what stuck in my head for the Harrison project.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere, off the top of my head, it's somewhere around there. But it's going to be nice. It's going to be a roundabout. I know not everybody likes the roundabout idea, but it's going to at least be underground utilities, a wider road, and
there you go.
School Road's been a problem for a long time.
And a donut. Okay, fine. We'll talk a little bit about the general plan meeting that happened last week. What was the reaction or lack thereof? And we'll also get a little bit of update on some of the information out of DHHS with homelessness and the current state of that.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Time is 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ryan Sundberg. But before we do our quote this afternoon, great quote. However, it's an unknown source. Schizophrenia beats dining alone. So, how was your general plan meeting on the 23rd? Did it do what you wanted it to? Do you think anything got accomplished? Was it worthwhile? More information? Blah, 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 blah.
We had a three-hour meeting scheduled from 6 to 9, and I took 2 hours of public comment. So my goal of getting through it in one meeting went out the window. But I think there was a lot of good comments. There was, of course, some people who I think are more there for the show and to get on in front of people and beat on their chest and say something mean about the supervisors and think that it's really neat to do. However, it's not very helpful, and if you really want to change something, I wouldn't recommend it. Then there was a whole other group of people.
I get those people calling me, too.
Do you?
Yeah.
What did they tell you?
Oh, it starts with four-letter words and then works its way from there. So I really don't know what the gist of it is. I just kind of tend to have telephone interruptions after about 30 seconds. Can you cut them off? I mean, if they start going goofy, we've got your input. Thank you very much. We understand what you're saying.
I actually have a button that I can push, and it's not quite as like a trap door.
Alligator pit?
No, but it cuts off the microphone. So if they start getting out of hand, I can cut them off. I haven't had to cut anybody off yet. Most people are, I'll let them go pretty far, but if they start getting out of hand, I can cut them off.
So does that then take them off of the official record? Or does that just protect you against FCC potential issues with the rebroadcast of that meeting?
That's broadcast live.
So right, but if you kill the mic,
then they're cut off from there. But whatever they set up until that point, it would be part of the record
because
it's on Humboldt Access.
When you pop it, And they would go off. Do their comments continue to be added to the official record? The stenographer and all that kind of stuff?
We don't have a stenographer. We have someone who records the motions and that kind of thing. Our record is the tape of the meeting. So once
Really? So you're not having to, there's no notes? that are taken contemporaneously?
No. We have the video and then we have the audio. And that's what we use.
Well, we all know which one takes precedent. You better get it right.
Yeah. So anyways.
Not even going to venture, are you?
But there was some really helpful comments that came in, and I appreciated what people attempted to do. And we tried to take Estelle and Rex's comments, the comments that we got over email and phone calls and comments that came that day, and blend them all together and come up with something that more people could live with. And I don't think anybody was happy with all of them, but I felt pretty good about the majority of them, that the majority of people would be okay with what we did, because it was
trying to make the brush broader to be more inclusive and less focused, or some of the folks that are either the naysayers or the ankle nibblers, to get them included so that they kind of back off and allow the process then to finally come to conclusion?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I've heard, you know, ever since when I first started running and all that, is people were ignored and their comments didn't make it into the plan. And, you know, so now that there's, you know, a perception that it's another way, I think it would be almost hypocritical to not take other people's input, and especially if it's workable and you can hold on to your core values and what you want to see in the plan and still blend it in somehow. I mean, I think it's the right thing to do. I think you have a stronger plan at the end of the day.
But when do you shut the door? Say, okay, we got it. We got all the information we can do so that we can now arrive at a final product then start the amendment process the next week.
Well, we take public comment up until the time we start to straw vote. And once we straw vote, you know, we'll have one more chance at the end. If we really screw something up, we have a chance to bring it up one more time at the very end. But that's where I cut off the comment, is once we start to get to each policy, you know, you have to go from there. Back to what I was saying, having more people involved and having more people heard it's going to be a stronger plan. I can just imagine that, you know, if I was gone and whoever replaces me, you know, was thought completely different than I do, if it was, you know, if we just didn't listen to anybody, just did exactly what we wanted, they're going to have a mandate to change that plan. You know, in McKinleyville, I'll give you a good example. It was a long process to get the McKinleyville general plan, but they absolutely defend that document to the death because they all believe in it.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319. Okay. What I'm trying to get to, and I'll throw it out to you, is...
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. The North Coast Repertory Theater is now celebrating its 30th season with 6 treats for Humboldt audiences. First is the George S. Kaufman Moss Hart Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy, You Can't Take It With You. Then the musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the Peanuts comic strip. After the holidays, there'll be a double feature straight from ancient Greece, the murderous tragedy Oedipus the King and the comedy Women in Congress. Next is the side-splitting Complete Works of William Shakespeare, a parody in which all 17 of the Bard's plays are played in 97 minutes. Late Spring features the North Coast premiere of the popular Les Miserables. The season ends with The Poor of New York, a melodrama from 1857 of the problems of a middle-class family not all that different from today's. For dates, times, and details, call 442-6278. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic organization dedicated to the people and events that make this a good place to live.
3, 2, 1. Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ryan Sundberg. Ryan, looking at the general plan as it is today, now, where are you in the process? Have some of the elements or chapters, if you will, if it's a book, been adopted? Has nothing been adopted? Are we rewriting the entire book? Are we in the editing process? Let's pull out of this so we don't talk government. Mm-hmm. go into a book that neither of us really know what's going on with.
Yep.
Where are we in this process having the book written?
Yeah, we're about three quarters of the way through it. And I did ask that question just the other day. Is there certain chapters in here, if we feel good about them? You know, like one of them that came through was a telecommunications element. Harlini controversy, it was, there's grants that can be written off of it and that kind of thing. And the answer was the environmental impact report has to be inclusive. So you'd have to write a separate environmental impact report for the telecommunications element if you wanted to do it, if you wanted to adopt it separately. So you basically get stuck. You have to do it all at once. You know, we're taking straw votes up until the end where we'll do a final vote on it. But it's been a slow process, but we've been going through this thing line by line, policy implementation measure, because we want to make sure that the plan that we get doesn't let people live the way they want in Humboldt County, still protects the environment. It's a balanced plan that's going to be workable for everyone. You know, we don't want something so restrictive or have one of the tentacles of, so you pass something over here and say that it's okay that you have principally permit a house being built over here, but then you pass a couple other policies somewhere else that make that impossible. That was one of the fears that a lot of people
just
had.
Not having it coordinated,
or just
between
not
itself,
just having a lot of stuff hidden in there. That was one of the fears, is there was hidden things that people were worried that just because you said it was okay over here, there's two or three things somewhere else in a different chapter that didn't make that possible. And we've been really careful. We have staff reports that come that connect them. We know when we get it, it says what other policies are connected to this policy. So you can go back and find them. How is this different than the original plan from 1984? Is it? And then we ask the question, is this required by law? And if so, if it's not required by law, why are we doing this?
So you're wanting the book, the critique by the reviewers,
mm-hmm.
and Cliff Notes, all in one shot.
We want to know why. If it's more restrictive than state law or federal law, why are we doing it? What's the problem? And
are there examples of that happening?
Where it's more restrictive? Yeah, there's places in there that's more restrictive.
Was that from community input, or is that from staff's personal opinion?
I'll give you an example. And this was from two meetings ago. We had Ag Exclusive. And I think most people agree that there's a limited amount of prime agriculture land in Humboldt County left, and we want to protect it. Well, how do you do that? Well, there's some people who thought, if you have 20-acre parcels, that was enough. People could have hobby farms. They could, but with a 20-acre parcel, you have the right to principally permit a house being built there. And then there was other people who wanted 60 acres. They said, you can't have a real farm and make money and be a farmer unless you have 60 acres.
But that's not the concern of government, whether or not I can profitably farm in 20 acres or not.
If you want to keep that in agricultural land for the long term and not have it converted to homes,
you couldn't go 20 plus acres, or was somebody afraid that every 20 would be chopped up
exactly
out of that 60, and you'd have three more homes?
Well, yeah, if it gets cut into 20, then you have a house and a barn and the other infrastructure that comes along with it. So what we did is we said, okay, we'll go with the 60 acres, but we principally permitted a house and a second residence, all within a two acre footprint.
So like a mother-in-law garage, barn.
What we
all in the same area.
What some people wanted was it to be a secondary residence, so it'd have to be smaller, and then it'd have to be for farming purposes. And we took all that away, and we said, well, if the farmer that's living there wants his kids to come live there, and he shouldn't have to build a smaller house. He can build as big a house as he wants, as long as it's in that 2-acre footprint, and it's principally permitted. He doesn't have to go through a big, long process. He doesn't have to prove that it's for farming. He can rent it out if he wants and make some extra income. It's, you know, I didn't
You guys
care.
Really didn't say that in talking with 60-acre parcels, did you?
There's a lot of people that live on...
I'm thinking not of today's application, but of tomorrow's, if legalization occurs. Is a lot of this stuff set up or with the backdrop of legalization of marijuana?
I don't know.
Has that been in there in the discussions at all?
No, I mean, I think farming's farming, whether you're growing, you know, corn or marijuana, it's going to be the same kind of, it's going to be the same process. And I think farming's farming in my book. But how people live on that farm, I don't care. You know, it's, you know, but I think they should be able to have options. So they, you know, I think we had a good balanced approach to that one, and it worked.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
Are you thinking about opening or expanding your business in McKinleyville? Come see what the McKinleyville Shopping Center has to offer. We're holding an open house for prospective tenants this Wednesday, October 2nd from 4 to 7 p.m. We have great lease rates and incentives. Benefit from the foot traffic generated by quality businesses like Safeway, Ramon's Bakery, Subway, and Napa Auto Parts. Call us at 268-1800 with any questions or visit McKinleyvilleShoppingCenter.com. Come join us this Wednesday from 4 to 7.
2-1. Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're about to talk shop this afternoon with Ryan Sundberg and his computer. That's kind of cool. Are you finding that the iPads are doing what you were hoping that they would do last year when everybody got them, cutting down the paper, getting the information to you more timely?
Yeah, I told you the stack of paper, you know, half a foot thick that I would have to drive to Eureka to go pick up on every Friday. Now they can download the draft agenda, so we get that sooner. We get that on Wednesday or Thursday, so you can start reading earlier. And then the final one comes out on Friday, and we download that onto the iPad, and then $30 a week is what they would spend on those packets. So,
our other department,
this thing's already been paid for.
Are you guys getting those for other department heads also?
There's a couple other department heads that have them. Yeah, the ones that, especially Phil, and then Phil's office CAO, and I'm not sure if County Council has one or not, but.
I would think there would almost be standard issue for any department head, just so that they, you know,
they've got different. They don't have an iPad, but I know that, Phil Crandall has a different computer that he wanted to use, and you know, this one you can't put in a USB plug-in where you have the memory stick.
You can't play games.
No, you can play games. You just download the apps, but you can't plug in.
Notice how quick he was on that one, though, huh?
I have an 8-year-old.
Government property, man.
No, that's on her iPhone or her iPod.
Okay.
Or iPod, iPad, iPhone.
iPhone.
You know, geez.
I like you, man.
But that is one thing that I wish you could do is plug in a USB port, and so you have a memory stick from your computer and then plug in here, and it's also hard to print on these
things. You get
viruses
and things like that.
It's probably why they run better, yeah.
Imagine that.
But yeah, it is doing what we thought, and you can make notes on here. You can highlight things, and then what you can do is save your whole packet and meeting and your notes to the cloud. And instead of trying to keep track of all this paperwork around your office, and saves a bunch of paper and
a bunch
of time.
Have you had any blowback on that?
Have I had any what?
Blowback? Anybody
from who?
Taking exception to the fact that all the supervisors got iPads. How come?
Not after you explain to them that after, you know, 8 to 12 months, the county's saving money just from, you know, that's not including if you if you're trying to save trees. You know, it's good all the way around. You know,
so
saves trees. So, and it saves me a trip to Eureka every Friday picking up that packet.
See, it's two more valuable hours.
It takes me 25 minutes from my house to get up to my office.
I'm talking about when you walk in and all the conversations that happen as you're trying to get out. Yeah, I know how that game gets played.
That's another 35 minutes minimum.
See?
You are good.
Stunning. Yep. Let's talk a little bit about homeless in Humboldt County at this point. It's moving into a different discussion arena at this point. I don't think that there's anybody with a lick of sense who hasn't seen the growth of homelessness in our area, the impact into our neighborhoods, impact into our businesses, our backyards. I don't see that any of those are discussion points, really. Now, there may be some who want to argue, but okay. By and large.
Is it a problem? Yes.
Exclamation point, underline.
Why is there a problem? That's the better discussion.
And that
point.
Can be kind of, you know, that's family issues, that's personal decision issues. I mean, there's a bunch of things that are in that mix also. It seems as if there's consensus that there are subcategories, that there are the mentally impaired, dysfunctional, whatever you want to call it, for whatever reason, whether it was personal choice or maybe they were dealt a bad hand of cards at birth. But anyway, there's a segment that's that way that we used to, as a society, work with them, whether it was through family, that was still intact at that point, through churches, or through the medical hospitals that the state would operate. Okay, that kind of went out of favor about 50 years ago. Things have changed there. We've got the hobo, the lifestyle choice, which I don't get. I just don't get that one. You got the down and outer, and then you've got what somebody just so beautifully coined a couple years ago, trustafarians. They got the big bucks from back home, and they're just kicking around, enjoying life, not having to contribute, and actually taking.
My favorite, when I went to Humboldt, right? And there was always at least one or two kids in the class that would, at the beginning of the year or the semester, look, you know, clean cut and that kind of thing. By the end of the semester, dreadlocks, you know, no showers, dirty clothes. And then Christmas would come around and we, you know, I lived here. And then I'd come back to school and see the person all clean cut again. I'm like, oh, you know, if someone just saw you about 2 months or a month and a half ago, they'd think that you were.
Situational ethics, huh?
Yeah, it was great. Mom and dad said that you weren't going back to school unless you got a haircut.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah, cut off the dole, so to speak.
Those ones cracked me up.
So as we look at those segments, you know, and it's tough because of the general community, you know, we don't have time to get into the details, the nuances. All we see is what we see, and the impact, the negative impact into our communities. When we have friends, family in the area, they're stunned to revolted on what's going on, what this community has allowed to occur. What do we know about the situation? And just our little neck of the woods in Humboldt County. Is it growing? Is it shrinking? Is there the chemically dependent? Are we just a safe haven for these folks to come and hang out? What is going on out there?
Yeah, and one of the things that when we started hearing more about it, especially in the last few weeks, we meaning the Board of Supervisors, asked Department of Health and Human Services, because one of the things you hear is, boy, Humboldt County is they're really attracting people, and people, you know, are giving out so much that, of course, they're going to come to Humboldt County because that's where all the benefits are, and we're going to, you know, treat them so well that this is the place to come.
And a bureaucracy in place to support that.
Yeah,
ongoing.
You know, half of the employees at the Humboldt County are from the Department of Health and Human Services, and, you know,
two-thirds of the budget.
No, half of the budget.
Well, I mean, depends on who you hear.
Well, I'm
but half the employees.
I help do the budget. So
62% is the number that I had heard of the budget.
No, it's right at.
It's 50-50.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, regardless, for one department other than law enforcement to get 50% of the budget is a stunner for a lot of people, particularly if they're not Californians.
But you know, the general fund is what we deal with most the rest of it's all grant money that comes in and how successful they are getting grants and you know, all that. And, you know, we're the only, I think we're one of two, I think, that run a mental hospital, Semper Virens. You know, this, those kinds of things are, it's around $5 million out of our 300.
It's $1 million a bed, roughly?
No, no. Our general fund.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Semper Virens.
For all of Department of Health and Human Services, it's around $5 million that we do out of that.
So where's Sonoma County? I mean, they're a little bit bigger than us, but are there parallels in other communities? Because I would think that would be, if I'm doing an analysis, that's where I'm going first. Comparable counties, non-urban setting, California. Okay, what are their percentages?
I don't know what their percentages are. I know what we do. And, you know, for general relief, they, you know, it's a mandated program that the county has to do for, you know, indigents, people who can't take care of themselves, disabled.
So that would be the mental folks? Is this everybody being treated the same?
Yeah, and it's to provide food, shelter, and medical care for those people. They get it for an initial 3 months in a 12-month period, and they must seek employment at that time. And the other thing people don't realize.
Well, we know how that game gets played, though.
Well, that's fine.
We've had some people apply, but, and so have we.
There's always people that know how to work the system, and there's no way around that, especially with government. But it's also a loan. It's not, you know, it's not something that's a grant.
So there's a payback?
There is.
So for three months, what do they get?
Let's see. 3 months they get. I have those numbers here. So one of the things you say is that it's probably way higher in Humboldt County is probably what you've heard, right? In Humboldt County, the maximum general relief you can get is $303 a month. The state average is $291 a month.
And then that is for an individual?
That's for an individual.
Where does the dog factor fit in?
Okay, that's another good question. And I actually have the answer to that.
Not as if these are first-time questions, I know.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, I've got it on here. So one of the myths that we had down here is the Humboldt County Department of Health and Human Services gives homeless people with dogs more money. And what really is going on is the Department of Health and Human Services provides absolutely no funding through any of its programs, including general relief, for dogs or any other companion animal. The federally run Supplemental Security Income Program, SSI, which the county has nothing to do with or administers. We don't administer it either. There's a lot of programs out there that the county administers. We don't have any control over how it, you know, how much money
it's processed.
But we do it for them. People automatically assume that we have control over it. But SSI provides funding to SSI recipients who care for a trained service dog for the blind, deaf, or disabled.
So that's not what we're talking here, you know.
So they're
getting zero for those dogs?
Zero. That's your answer. Let's see. One of the other.
So where did that one come from?
I mean, I don't know where it came from.
Formerly, was there dog money?
I have no idea.
Oh, well, but, you know, that's just because you're too
sometimes,
young.
Sometimes you played that game where you whisper to one person, and by the end of it, it's a completely different
story. At the end, you turn out looking good and being well-liked.
So guess how much money in general relief was recouped last year, because it's a loan, remember? I told you. How much do you think was recouped?
Of 300...
Out of those people who...
How many million a year?
I think it's around $2.5-3 million.
So $3 million a year is going out. And what percentage was repaid?
Mm-hmm.
I would guess 10 to 12%. You wouldn't have asked it if it was at that level, though.
$400,000 was recouped last year.
So 130%? No.
No.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. Never mind.
You were pretty close, actually, on your percentage. It was a little higher than that.
Ha ha ha. Not that I'm smart or anything.
You get a gold star.
Oh, really? Okay. Good. Don't let it get tarnished. I want it bright.
Yeah. So there's
certainly a lot of frustration.
One more thing I want to throw in there for, you know, because we don't give cash. The cash payments used to be
they get the credit cards
more.
Now, don't they? Or no, those got dismissed.
Yeah, and they basically the most cash they get is $30, and the rest of it, you know, the rest of it's in vouchers for food and for, you know, and do some people take those? I've heard of stories of people buying a whole bunch of soda, cans and stuff, and then recycling that and going buying. There's some things that you cannot.
There are ways to scam it.
Yeah. There's the scammers out there. Or they sell their food card and then go buy drugs. Or, you know, there's nothing you can do about it.
No, there's secondary markets.
But these are mandated programs that we have shrinked down and made as hard as possible. And, you know, I'm pretty confident that we're doing the best we can with the mandated programs that we're given.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Ryan Sundberg.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:47. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ryan Sundberg. Ryan, as we look at the Department of Health and Human Services, that's going to be probably what the community group's first initial look at is. The staff size is a couple thousand people?
Yeah.
So why does this department need 50% of the total employment base of the county? Are there that many things going on? Where does the magnitude of that department come from?
I don't think it's our fault, but the way that the state and federal government have set up these fundings, it's really siloed. Supervisor Smith told me when I just got on, he said, if we had that $300 million budget, if the Board of Supervisors had control over that money, we could solve a lot of problems around here. But it's so siloed over there, you know, and they apply for a grant, and then they get the grant, and then they can spend the money on this, this, and this, and it has to have, I mean, just to report all of what they're doing. I mean, there's a huge department just in fiscal staff. Then there, I mean, the call center that they have, I mean, that's a huge department.
The grants that are there, when they expire, do those people associated with that grant also disappear?
Yeah, we had...
So there is turnover in that staff? It's not just...
Oh, yeah. When I came on, they had just had a round of funding cuts. It was a 22% funding cut, and there was 350 people, I think, left. So they were up to... I forget what the number
is. So that's a third of their staff, roughly, in one shot?
So, yeah, maybe it was 200 people that they lost. It was somewhere around there.
Okay.
The answer is yes. When their funding goes down, they don't have any choice because the Board of Supervisors gives them, you know, the $5 million, and most of that goes for the general relief payments because we're mandated to do it, and the rest of their funding is all grant-funded.
Estelle had shared when she did her camp tour.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Nobody was from Humboldt County. These were all people from out of the area. But they heard that Humboldt County was a great place to come and move on and dance around. And then we got the trimmers that come. And if you
That's the cultural thing.
Right.
Nothing to do with how much food stamps they were going to get, right?
But it has to do with the amount of people that are begging on the streets. To my way of thinking, it also defrauds those people who really need the services because they are down on their luck. And it's going to these goofballs that don't need it, but they're stepping up to the trough just like, you know, they belong there. We seem to have an inordinate large percentage of those types of folks here. Shasta doesn't have it to our extent. I mean, there are a bunch of others that are in the neighborhood that aren't dealing with it to the same extent that we are. Is it fair to say it's drug culture?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the answer is to that.
I sucked up all the time, so you don't even have to respond anymore. Really is. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Thanks for having me.
We're Talking Shop with Ryan Sundberg. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.